Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 203 of the Roguecast. There's not a raccoon joker.
All right, so we are back after... We went weekly for, I want to say, 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then chaos. The chaos of 2020 happened. Comics arrived late 1 week, and there was all sorts of rescheduling we had to do.
I was going to specifically shipping through UPS.
That's unfortunately just kind of constant now. Is like, we used to be able to say, oh, we're going to get game orders on Monday and Thursday. Comics come in on Wednesday.
People play Friday Night Magic on Friday. Yep. About now, a million things.
Now it is, well, games and comics get here at some day of the week.
There's a dartboard. UPS is throwing darts at the board. Yeah. Sometimes they make the schedule. Sometimes it's off.
The good thing for customers is, for the most part, I think we managed to make it pretty invisible. Other than the fact that DC goes on Tuesday now.
Unless you follow our regular Facebook pages where we are shown to be insane. Always ranting.
Yeah, you know, they don't need to look behind the curtains.
No, don't do that. But,
look behind the curtains.
It does mean that as a result, the podcast sometimes, like, it will happen in a week when, oh, we don't have any comics to talk about. That's what happened last week. Also, we had busy stuff going on, so we skipped a week. But we're back now. We're going to talk about comics for last week as well.
And we're going to talk about, like, the big DC announcements. What do they call it? Fandome?
DC Fandome.
Yeah, they had, like, about 80 different trailers and things that they promoted last weekend.
Does anyone know why they're called Fandome? Was it actually pronounced Fandome? Is it French?
I don't think it's French. That's only Carnage.
He's the only Carnage. I assume it's... yeah. But I actually don't know. Was it just, like, a play on Thunderdome kind of stuff?
That's what I was wondering. I mean,
Take place in a dome?
Wait, is this what happened? All those laid off employees? Was there a murder ring? Did they fight each other?
Get in the dome!
Fight each other for a spot in the editorial ranks?
It's clearly a play on the word fandom, and I think they were just like, come to the fandome!
Fandome.
Man, the intern who came up with that.
It is funny as like, I guess it's lucky for DC that after a few weeks or even months of just like lots of terrifying news coming out about like the overall state of the company and like everything's in flux and nobody knows what's going to happen, and then they're like, but we have a bunch of good product for you, enjoy the product.
Product is all movies and TV,
right?
I saw several comic creators noting that, but there is apparently a comic version.
I was gonna say it was gonna be one giant thing. They've split it into two. One is music and TV, and the next is comics.
So tune in for Fandome 2.
Fandome Part 2.
The Fundoming?
The Fundoming. I did see also, by the way, the creators talking about that were saying that someone compared it to this was Hall H, and in a couple weeks we'll get the New York Comic-Con comics thing. I'm like, that makes sense. Okay.
It will be interesting because, you know, there's certainly been concerns about DC's comic line.
Not me. I love DC. I've been on board for years.
I'm not even talking about content. I'm talking about, like, whether they will just be making stuff and stuff like that. You know, how big the shakeups and layoffs and stuff.
Jim Lee did come out and say they are going to still produce comics, though. So.
Right. There's always the question of, is it damage control or is it this a true mission statement?
By the way, in 2020, what passes for good news, the bar has gotten really low. Well, Jim Lee did say they're still going to make comics.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Like, no other information. But we are going to quit publishing comics is good news now.
I mean, for all I know, they could just be publishing one Batman comic, one Superman comic, and that's it.
It's true. Yeah.
It sounds like if they are making this an event that they will have a number of titles.
I think I'm more curious about that half of the thing, because I do want to see the state of DC. Because they did get new executive publishers.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, are we ready to jump in, or do we have store topics that we want to mention
first? We're still on Prelude here.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, there is, as our new tradition is, store news. We're going to talk about the new games that have come in. So first of all, we want to give a heads up that Dave and I, especially me, went a little nuts on the Indie Press Revolution site. And we've got a bunch of indie RPGs, most of which we've never had before, coming in. We're going to have a brand new display for them. We're going to sort of give a little push for some indie RPGs, because there's a ton of cool stuff that you can play. You don't need maps or minis. You can play them over Zoom with friends. It's like the perfect time for them.
Yeah, these are the niches that they fill. I think people would be surprised at how many would fit them. Like, one that we've seen that's pretty popular over the years has been Dread, which I've run a few times, the Jenga-based horror RPG where you pull bricks and when the tower topples, your characters get killed or hurt.
It's the best example of all you can't play over Zoom.
You could. You have the GM pull it and you let him have the fun.
Everybody has their own Jenga sets.
Right. When you pull one from any one set, the other other people have to also pull from their set.
Oh my god.
I like it. It has to be the same brick, too.
Oh, I like it.
God, that's worse. That's terrible.
That'd be so horrible. Oh man, that'd be a slaughterhouse. But anyway, there's also some like ones that I love for being so weird of these indie RPGs that are meant to explore strange and unusual topics. Even some sort of deep stuff, like a lot of them kind of get a little deep into, like, you know, talking about difficult subject matter or talking about how civilizations rise and fall. Anyway, it's they're going to be really cool. I'm making up signs so that everything has like a little kind of summary of what's cool about it, so that you know, even if you don't know what its deal is, you can just quick read my little blurb.
Yep. So that'll be we'll have that in a few weeks whenever U.S. The Postal Service gets it to us. You know. Yep. As I can't imagine there being any disruption or slowness in the Postal Service right now. So
those guys are out there fighting like warriors in Mad Max land, and there are raiders.
What about the Kevin Costner type folks in the Postman?
Yes. Yes, we salute the Post Office.
Yes.
But games we got this week include the DC Deck Building, which has been a little scattershot of late, but they produced a new standalone game for Dark Knight's Metal. So you can like play the Dark Knight's Metal stuff. You can play the evil Batman
Who Laughs. Mm-hmm. What else would be in there, Nick? You've read it.
I mean, if it's all the evil Batman, I mean,
I can't really tell, but it's
what good guys would be in it.
I mean, it would be like the Justice League, but in their kind of nth metal outfits, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure it's got that kind of stuff.
Like that Batman statue that we got last week.
Great Capullo art and all that.
Yeah, coolness. Looks like fun. If you like the DC deck building, is I think one of our favorite deck building games.
Yep.
Yeah.
We were saying that they should repackage it and just like take some of the smaller sets and put them in bigger sets.
Yep,
and just rebrand it. Or
there's also we get Takenu Obelisk of the Sun, which is a new game about playing Egyptian pharaohs. Seems to be a resource builder. It's the guys who designed it. It's one of the designers of Dice Settlers, which is a game I really like.
Yeah,
and I forget who the other designers, but it's like there were notable designers on it.
It looks like a very pretty
looks
game.
Like a cool game. Love Letter Infinity Gauntlet, which is the Marvel version of the classic Love Letter game, which is supposed to be a lot of fun.
Love Letter has had many iterations, and that's cool that happened.
And then we got Wave 12 of the Nolzers and Deep Cuts miniatures, which we actually like made a new wall for. Like there's a ton.
Those
of
are the big. These are the D&D minis we sell that are like have a great price point for much of the small ones of $4.99. And you get two miniatures with them that have great sculpts on them. Like, if you get a wizard, you'll get him, like, one casting a fireball and the other, like, reading a tome of magic. And they're, like, just spectacular sculpts. They've become, like, a feature for our store.
Yeah.
Like,
and then they've got...
Nick made cool signs.
They've started doing monsters and stuff. Like, they've started doing some really cool monsters. Black Pudding was in this one.
This is the first time that they've introduced a medium-sized line into it.
Yeah, which they've got a new scale.
At an $8.99 price point, it's things like Manticore and...
The old D&D monster, the Roper.
Yep.
That stalactite and stalagmite
creature.
And there's an
awesome Minotaur.
Yeah, he's one of the $14.99 was, but the...
Oh, is he the big one?
The Minotaur of the Maze, he looks amazing.
Also, the Manticore...
the Maze Minotaur is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The Manticore, there's a paint set, a limited edition paint kit, where you get it for $20 instead of $15.
It's a great buy.
And you get paints to paint them, so that's...
Yeah, I heard back from a customer who did that, and he said here's the funny thing. He said the brushes aren't great, but the paints are really good, and like it's a great buy.
Well, the paints are Vallejo, and Vallejo is a really good paint brand.
And I believe it comes with, like, a link to a painting tutorial or something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Tutorial, so, yeah, it is
a great deal for $20.
And right as we got those new minis, we also got a new series of paints. The Turbo Dork paints.
Yes. These guys are kind of like... It's almost obnoxious, but they clearly know that they are doing this kind of 90s extreme thing.
It is... You know,
very self-aware.
You remember the movie Big?
Yeah.
Where like a 13-year-old kid, Joey Baskin, gets turned into a toy executive?
Yeah.
I feel like that might have been what happened to Turbo Dork. I feel like a 12-year-old from the 90s magically got turned into an adult and made the paint line of a 90s kid. Because the branding is all like 90s extreme, and it's got these doofy names like Cool Ranch, Spicy Meatball, Multipass, Bubblegum Crisis, Sparkle Motion. There's like 50 different colors, I think. But the thing about these are like metallic paints that have They have metallic plates in them, right?
Yeah, they're also sort of transitioning colors, so depending on the angle you're holding it, they will have a different part of the color spectrum,
yeah, the light will kind of, like, change them a little bit under it. It seems like...
you have to base coat your figure in black, right, and then paint over with this, and it'll come through really well.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's probably some samples online. Yeah. I hadn't looked at it yet, but yeah, I've heard good stuff, and I'm very interested to see somebody paint. I would like to see a gelatinous cube.
That'd be fun,
personally. But whatever.
Yeah, I would like to see some of these paints in action. It sounds like a cool idea. All right, let's talk over to regular news. I got one bit of news before we go into DC fandom.
Fandom.
So, we got news from Sony that Olivia Wilde is directing a female-fronted Spider-Man-related movie. Everybody's guessing Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
But it could easily be Spider-Gwen. It could be that Black Cat Silver Sable thing they were talking about doing.
Yeah.
But
did Olivia Wilde do Booksmart?
I think that is correct.
I think so. That's like a pretty huge pedigree. That was like a huge breakout indie teen comedy.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I was not in love with it does not mean that...
I actually thought it was a good movie.
Every friend of mine loved it. Like, it was like kind of like a... I don't even want to say Scott Pilgrim, because it was kind of more serious than that, even though it was also kind of goofy, too. But definitely a more girl-centric tale.
Yeah, it's a girl-centric sort of...
Coming of age?
Yeah, coming of age. Not American Pie, but sort of along those kind of lines.
Yeah, like what would have been John Hughes movies in the 80s, you know? A mixture of, like, kind of outrageous comedy, but, like, also some, like, super serious moments.
I'm pretty sure right now it's on Hulu. I would give it a shot if you've got it.
Yeah.
It's
fun. And I think that was Olivia Wilde, so that's, like, a pretty notable debut.
What's interesting is Sony's live action has not been particularly great. Like, I know that you guys both like Venom.
But you don't, so it's not great.
But I don't. I don't think either of you would call it great.
Yeah, maybe not great.
It's risen in my esteem as time passes.
I do think it's quite good at what it does.
It is Tom
Hardy. Great is a strong word.
It is Tom Hardy's best movie.
No.
Yes, it is.
Nick, have you seen The Drop yet?
No.
I was told to watch The Drop, and having seen it now, I was like, yeah, that's probably his best movie. But it also
does he do multiple voices and talk to himself constantly?
It is not a novelty movie like these movies.
How could it be better than this?
Is it the best in the way that Nicolas Cage's movies are ranked? Is this
not at all. It's actually a really good movie.
No, Venom, I mean.
A little bit.
I mean, I'm half joking here, but I do like Venom, and it is maybe my favorite Tom Hardy performance.
What are the other Sony movies?
I mean, they did the Spider-Man stuff before Homecoming and all that.
Yeah, but basically going all the way back to Maguire and all that.
They did do the Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, technically Sony movies, even though they are produced in conjunction with Marvel. Yeah. This, I don't know if Marvel would be involved. I think this would be Sony off on their own.
I think it would be smart to do a Spider-Woman movie and kind of shore up her origin story a little bit, because it is a little bonkers.
Yeah, I would like that.
Jessica Drew Spider-Woman?
Yes.
Yeah, I like Jessica Drew. I've loved the Spider-Woman run that...
Didn't it make more sense that she would do Spider-Gwen since she just did a teen comedy?
It would make more sense because Spider-Gwen, and I bet that's what they're doing, is a live-action... A live-action Spider-Gwen movie would be great.
Yeah, I think that would be great, too.
I think a lot of people glommed onto the character and into the Spider-Verse, so I think it's a good time. I would probably, if I were just on a purely financial level for the movies guys for Sony, I would consider that, I think, before introducing Spider-Woman.
Why did I see so much online speculation, though, that it was Spider-Woman?
Because people don't know anything.
I mean, I guess that's true. I mean, that is true.
There may be more Spider-Woman stuff that had been in development, and, like, she was just, like, in a kind of, like... Make it happen.
Spider-Man, you're right though, Dave. That makes perfect sense if they're like, hey, we got this girl who did a, we got this woman who did a really good like girls coming of age movie.
Yep.
Let's do Spider-Gwen. That makes a better sense than let's ever do Spider-Woman. Maybe it's Silk.
Yeah.
That's an outside chance.
And also just because you do a movie about teenage girls doesn't mean you can't do a movie about a woman. Nope. I'm pretty sure.
That's why John Hughes could only do movies about
Silk
teenagers.
Actually,
I think that's kinda true.
Silk actually makes a lot of sense.
That's right. She can only go younger.
Yeah, that's what John Hughes taught us. You have to follow that formula.
You can never go older, only younger.
Spider baby.
All right, let's dive into the DC news. Before Fandome came out, there was a big reveal that DC had named their interim editor-in-chief. It's the first time in a while we've had a company that had two editors-in-chief.
Yep.
Marie Javins.
The editors-in-chief.
Editors-in-chief. Not editors, not editor-in-chiefs. As Rich Johnson or Bleeding Cool was doing it.
Fool.
Bleeding Fool. Marie Javins and Michelle Wells. Marie Javins has been in charge of like international stuff, and she's been around forever. She was a Marvel. She was a colorist at Marvel. She was an editor during the '90s, I think. She famously did like a world tour where she talked about, you know, traveling the world and by bus and boat and all this kind of stuff.
Interesting.
She's amazing, and she was involved on an editor, Epic Comics, Marvel Comics. She was involved with Akira, Gru, and Earth X as a few things. Since she came in as editorial assistant and secretary for Mark Gruenwald. She worked with Teshkil Media Group and created the 99, which was basically a Muslim superhero team. And then she's one of the editors in chief, which is really cool. I actually think she's sort of maybe the more old school of the two.
Yeah.
But she knows comics. She's well liked. She's someone that I would trust to put in charge of things.
Interesting.
The other person is Michelle Wells, who is did the Young Readers, Digital Initiatives.
When you say Young Readers, do you mean like those little novel type ones that they did that were like the YA ones?
That is exactly what I mean.
Like Batgirl and Catwoman and all that.
Yep.
Okay. Those look like, basically, I have not really read those, but from our staffers who have read them and from customers who have read them, it seems like they were quite well received.
Yeah, she was the person doing the stuff. She worked at Disney, First Books, DK. She's been DC for 4 years. And I have this feeling that what they're doing is like getting the old school comics person and the new school books comics person and getting them to work together, or maybe to fight in the fan domain.
So just for my sake of thing, it's Jim Lee at the top right now. He is
actually Michelle Lifford's at the top.
Okay.
For DC and then Jim Lee.
And he's chief creative officer.
And then these two are the editors in chief.
Okay. I think this is good.
I gotta say, I actually think that's good. I'm gonna be curious to hear what comes out of Fandom A 2.
Part 2.
Right, like, everything right now is, like, so chaotic, it's hard to, like, be like, this sounds like a great new start. But those are some positive things.
Yep.
Yes.
Definitely, I mean, of all the... I don't wish layoffs on pretty much anybody, except for if you turn to be a scumbag like Jeff Loeb. I don't really want anybody to lose their dream job. I know that would suck, and I have a little empathy for them.
No.
At the same time, I am not sad that Bob Harris is no longer at DC.
Yeah.
I'm not sad that Dan DiDio decided to retire ahead of being probably better being fired. Like, I don't think a change has been coming for a long time. Now, whether or not it's a big enough change, or whether all this rock came from the head, I don't know.
Right.
But I know and like at least one of the people in charge of DC right now, and that has not been the status quo for like 15 years.
When is the part two? Is it this coming weekend that's part two?
No, I believe there's a like two or three week gap in between.
Okay, so we're a little ways out.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Fandome.
Okay.
So the first thing to talk about, obviously, is the Justice League Snyder Cut trailer.
And, I thought you were going to say the first thing to talk about is obviously the Batman trailer.
No, I want to talk about the stuff that I hate first. I'm going to make a promise to you guys here that I'm going to try to rein my DC hate in by, like, 30%.
Uh-huh.
So I'm starting off right here with the Snyder Cut by saying, this is not for me.
Yeah. let's just a quick go around the room before we even, go any deeper. Nick, you're going to watch it, I believe?
Oh, heck yeah. Sign me up for 4 hours of Justice League by Snyder at this point.
And this is because you are such a fan of Snyder?
No. I hate Man of Steel with a passion.
Yes.
It is the worst Superman movie of all time.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably the worst DC movie of all time. All
right.
Worse than Batman vs. Superman.
I actually like the director's cut of Batman vs. Superman. There are enough scenes in there that felt better in my mind than anything Man of Steel had to offer. And I like Ben Affleck as Batman. Okay. I think he's a solid choice.
So what you are saying is that Snyder's directed one of your like a movie you despise,
yes,
and one that you like all right.
Yeah.
And
he did Dawn of the Dead, which I love.
Right.
And then 300, which I hate.
Yeah.
And
how are you on Sucker Punch?
Oh, I hated that too, but I saw it in theaters.
How about Watchmen?
I'm mixed, because I feel like it's okay.
So you really don't know what you're going to get when you hit a Snyder
movie. No.
You could be crying tears of blood, or you could be like, that was pretty good.
But it's also, this is HBO Max. I get it for free. It's there.
Nick, as the guy who ran the video store and saw a lot of stuff,
I've seen enough.
Generally a let's do it. Sure.
I'm just saying, 4 hours of your time, Nick, is a valuable quantity.
I've watched 4 hours of Holy Moly over the weekend.
Which you could spend on the internet telling people that the cut is going to suck.
I think this trailer was amazing. I think the contents of the trailer was good. The music choice, dear God, Snyder. I hope that wasn't
Return
you.
does Zack Snyder not know there's other music besides Hallelujah?
I don't think he does. That's all there is. I think that's what he just plays on.
So he was going to do that. He was going to do that Johnny Cash song from Dawn of the Dead again.
No, you should do Hurt. That would have been appropriate. Yeah. I did see someone who did a fan mashup of Smash Mouth's All Star, and that was pretty great.
What about you, Dave? Where do you fall?
I'm not going to see it.
Because we saw Justice League together.
Yes.
And it was okay.
Yeah, I think I liked it all right, and I think probably the Whedon-esque elements, which there's definitely like sort of a backlash against them, but I think it's as... I don't know how much of it is just driven by, you know, essentially marketing sort of fever for the Snyder cut. Like, is it...
No, it does sound like the set was pretty volatile.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, it's not that I think that Whedon is, like, himself some great guy.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, creative choices and stuff, I definitely align more with him than I do with Snyder. So I suspect that, like, basically I think I got enough of my fill of the Justice League movie with his version. If people told me that I might like, if you tell me, Nick, that I might like the Snyder Cut version, I would consider
it. I wouldn't trust my judgment on this one.
All right.
Although, in the trailer, I mean, Darkseid looks weird. I mean, he's shirtless for one thing. I couldn't figure that one out. But you do see, like, Desaad as well, which I was... Desaad looked
Desaad-ish. I only watched it once, and I did not notice Desaad, I guess.
Yeah.
I
like the more fourth world.
Should I watch it? I can't Desaad. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the rest of the stuff, like, there were lots of things that I was like, I don't remember this scene, but I also have, like, only seen Justice League once.
But from what I understand, Snyder's changing a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, cutting certain things out, and then...
They might be using old footage, but they didn't film new footage, right?
From what I understand, they did shoot new things and spent,
like the leads didn't come back, did they?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't think...
There's the impression they did.
Are there going to be sequences where Henry Cavill has a real mustache?
I mean, that would be awesome. I'd be like, just roll
for
with
no
it.
For reason, Superman has a mustache for half the movie.
I wonder how much of it is in slow-mo.
I'm sure at least 65% of the new footage is slow motion.
Like gun shells toppling slowly.
Is it possible? It's not a director's they didn't add anything. It's just that they slowed it all down.
That's possible.
That's why it's 4 hours instead of 2 hours. It's all slow motion.
I thought it was an interesting choice. They're making a mini series. They're going to be 4 1-hour episodes.
That's my Pirates of the Caribbean chop.
Put out through HBO Max, which weird. I thought is an interesting choice.
So there's possibility gonna like previously on Justice League.
Yes.
With like an I want it to be like the old 90s Deep Space Nine trailers and stuff like that where they're like a new episode of Deep Space Nine, a deadly warrior enters the station. I want that voice guy to do it.
Sure.
Anyway, so there we are. We're divided at best on this.
Randy's not gonna watch it. Dave might watch it.
Nick's,
I'm gonna watch
Nick
it.
Is the canary in the coal mine.
It's a good comparison. Because that is a canary in the coal mine is exposed to poison and dies.
The canary went 1 foot into the coal mine and immediately expired in slow motion.
This doesn't sound good for me.
All right. There's not much to say about this, but they did do a new Wonder Woman 1984 trailer.
Yep.
Which I guess this is coming out this year in theaters.
Yep.
Oh, I thought it was still 20. I thought it was going to be 2020.
No, they decided to put it out in
I think
November, right?
November. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to go see it in theaters. However, this is a lot more stuff that we learned in this trailer.
So we saw the cheetah.
We did see...
We saw the cheetah with the cheetah. And I think people are a little harsh on the cheetah effects.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're probably not finished.
I actually thought it looked good.
That looked okay.
I didn't particularly notice any issues. I, you know, and I guess there was like a little bit of... I almost sort of expect slightly subpar CG in trailers just because I know it's going to get popped
I thought
up.
There was a nice transition because we see her as Barbara Minerva, the regular person. We see Barbara Minerva as kind of a heightened individual. Mm-hmm. And then she becomes sort of the final iteration.
Full
cheetah. And it was cool. Like, when she was just doing, like, fighting Wonder Woman as herself, Kristen Wiig, I mean, looked awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually almost... I'm kind of more interested, and I am in her, like, character arc than I am the special effects.
Yeah.
This is the... I didn't grow up with Doctor Who, but I watched enough Star Trek sci-fi, which didn't always have the most cutting-edge special effects, to like value like a character story more than I am like how polished it is.
If you're saying you didn't grow up with Doctor Who, my first thought was like the notion of him being like your adopted brother.
Yeah, like y'all grew up with the Doctor, right?
No, I didn't.
He took y'all on adventures when you were in your teens and stuff like that. I did not have that experience.
I did, but my Doctor Who didn't have a TARDIS; he had a van.
Let's move on.
Anyway, I'm less hyped for it, not more hyped at this point.
We're sad to not have the music from
that New Order music was so perfect.
Yeah,
but this was the actual trailer.
Also,
this was...
I feel like the first trailer was more fun and bright and lively and very 80s colors. This one felt like they were trying to go the Zack Snyder road again a little bit more darker. And the end, the gag where he's wearing 80s clothes did not work for me. It was just, like, cheesy and fell flat.
I kind of liked it.
I'd be curious to see
I like those characters, and I'm going to enjoy their interaction.
And I think we're figuring out what Maxwell Lord is doing.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting idea, but we'll see how...
I actually didn't watch it closely enough to see that, so I don't know what his deal is quite going to be.
And I love that actor.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal.
Is he the Mandalorian?
He is the Mandalorian, yeah. And now he is... Maxwell Lord.
Yeah, he's great.
Alright. What else we got?
Let's talk about the video games.
Yep.
So, we got the teaser for the trailer for Gotham Knights, which looks like a four-player co-op. In fact, they both look like four-player co-ops.
Yeah, but it was the cinematic trailer, right?
Yes.
So it doesn't actually show the gameplay, I think...
A little bit here and there.
Did it?
Or yeah. I thought it did.
There is a gameplay video out there.
Oh, okay.
But it looks very Arkham Knight-ish.
Yeah.
But
it's put up by Rocksteady, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not? I thought this was.
It's somebody else.
Is Rocksteady the Suicide Squad?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, it's interesting because the premise of this I really like. The premise is that Bruce Wayne dies, and he leaves a video message for his, which of course feels like he would. Batman would have that prepared. Yeah. Tony Stark made like one every movie, so, so it makes sense that he would have one. But basically he's like, hey...
all the other
gone.
Gotham heroes.
I need you guys to rise to the occasion. And so it is Batgirl, Robin...
it's Tim Drake.
Red Hood. And Nightwing. And yeah, I love that it's the Tim Drake Robin. I love that it looks like Batgirl of Burnside with Tonfas.
Yep.
Everybody's got weapons. It looks like basically a four-player... It kind of looks like what I wanted out of Arkham Knight, which is a big co-op Arkham Knight, like a big open world.
Yeah.
Did I hear that there's not actual four-player, that it's only two-player?
Oh, that's too bad.
And the others are controlled by AI, which sounds a little bit like how like Left 4 Dead worked. Like, no matter whether you had one person or four people, any character not being controlled by the player was controlled by AI.
Yeah, but you could have four-player.
Right. But I thought... I remember them specifically mentioning two-player at some point.
Huh.
And I don't know why they would be specific about that if you could go up to four. But it does seem weird that you wouldn't be able to. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm... So it is being developed by WB Games Montreal. So it's actually in-house at Warner Brothers. And I guess... Oh, yeah, they did also say, like, the GCPD is corrupt, so you can't trust them. And, oh, the villains we should talk about looks like are the Court of Owls and the Talons. Which will probably be really cool.
Yeah, they sort of hold that out for the end of the trailer, and they make him real creepy and cool.
You're right, David. It's two player. That's unfortunate. So basically,
but easier to get together a group.
you can play it solo. You can also play it as a co-op multiplayer, where the second player can drop in and out at any time without affecting the other one. You can level up your characters. Enemies will be automatically leveled up as well. You can also use the bat cycle to explore the city. Sounds like fun. I'm curious. I feel like. Oh, so these guys developed Batman Arkham Origins, which I believe I heard was like a not as good version of the Arkham
Knights. Right. I know people who liked it okay, or some people actually liked it quite a bit, but it does seem like the general consensus was a bit of a drop in quality. Yeah.
So I'm curious about it. I like the premise. I like the characters. I have this feeling it's not going to be like on the level I want it to be. Finding out it's not four player, like... I wanted a Left 4 Dead but in Gotham kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, two player's still fun.
Just real quick, of the character loadout that they've got, any particular character y'all would most want to play?
Either Tim or Jason.
I'd be playing Tim Drake.
I would play any of those characters, but yeah.
You have to pick one, Randy.
Then I'll pick Batgirl, because you guys already took all the other ones.
DLC? I actually like the Azrael idea. That
Azrael?
Here's a weird thing. I hate this character, but Anarchy would be a fun thing to drop in.
Oh, that'd be cool. Or somebody kind of weird like the Creeper.
Creeper.
Who got some fun stuff in the recent DC Unkillables or Deceased Unkillables.
Yeah, yeah.
Would Ragman fit in there?
Ragman would fit. I could see that. Yeah. There's a lot of Gotham-y.
Yeah, depending on how deep they want to go.
Wild
I was also thinking that you could either do as a reskin of Batgirl, or it'd be cooler if they could do her with her own fighting style. If they did, like, the Stephanie Brown Batgirl.
Yeah.
Or they could just do her as a spoiler. But yeah. I think the Batgirl would be cooler if she had a cool costume.
Cassandra Cain,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, if they just do skins, you could do a bunch of cool Batgirl. Like, if I could buy all the Batgirl costumes, that'd be awesome.
She's only had a million costumes.
Yep. And they've all been good. That's the thing, is like, all of Batgirl's costumes are good.
I'm not wild about the most current one.
I think it's a good costume, it's just a little basic.
It's okay. Yeah. And, like, the headgear is my issue with it.
I get that.
If I ever saw her, I would join up with the Riddler and attack.
The other trailer we saw is for Suicide Squad by Rocksteady. This is called Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League.
Yep.
By Rocksteady Studios.
That was the one I was actually thinking of where you don't see the gameplay per se.
No, I don't think it's a gameplay video just yet.
But our coworker and sometimes podcaster here, Anna, was surmising it might be more like Borderlands. It looked like it had that kind of anarchic style of...
There's really no way to know. I mean, here's the thing. It could be
It's
that.
Because all the characters also, in addition to their normal weapons, everybody seems to have a gun of some sort.
Or it could be like that last DC Joker where everyone was running around in a sort of kind of anarchic fun.
Here's the thing, though. Everything these guys have done has been like the Arkham Knight game, so I don't know why
I heard this is even in continuity with the Arkham games.
I don't know why we wouldn't assume that this is going to be more like Arkham Knight, but with more player. It does say...
It looks more... Because those games aren't like big shooters, and this looked like a shooter. And literally everybody was blazing
away with
guns.
But this is called Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Yeah. So
the deal is that Brainiac is clearly controlling them.
Yep. And they're going to have to deal with a metropolis that's overrun with Brainiacs, and they've got to deal with...
And you get to choose from...
So it's set in an open world based on Metropolis. So that could be... I'm just saying, this sounds more like Arkham Knight-y.
Yeah.
With a little bit of Left 4 Dead.
I think because Arkham Knight game never did ranged combat that much, I think the Borderlands idea makes more sense based on all the weapons.
There was tons of ranged combat. You threw batarangs all the time.
But it's different with guns, where you might have like automatic constant weapon fire. That'd be pretty different.
We'll see. At any rate, when you play solo, you can switch between the characters, who are Harley Quinn, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, and King Shark.
Yep.
It's
a pretty good loadout of characters if you've got to just pare it down to four.
And the other characters are controlled by AI. This trailer was fun. I have my issues. I'm very picky on Suicide Squad. Like, I don't even necessarily like Harley Quinn being a part of it. The John Ostrander Suicide Squad is my Suicide Squad. I want Boomerang. I want Deadshot. I don't like that their Deadshot is basically more the Will Smith with a jetpack kind of guy. Like, there's stuff in here where I'm like, this is a little too video gamey.
These are all sort of amped up video game style
Boomerang
versions of the character
for some reason.
Well, his son had super speed.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
Yeah, true.
I think video game him is gonna have it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, not great, but I think gameplay-wise, it'd be fun.
And in a way, it makes sense to me as a way to, like, a guy who's meant to at least sometimes be able to take on the Flash probably needs a little bit more than he can throw well.
Yeah. And the thing is, having the Justice League as your big bosses makes sense. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
That said, I am tired of the evil Justice League, and I'm really tired of evil Superman. I saw one of my friends say long-suffering Superman is his favorite character.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, can we get something that's not an evil Superman? Because this is like, Injustice is evil Superman. This is evil Superman.
The Justice League, even Justice League Unlimited stuff, did evil version stories with them. They were good stories, but they played... This thing has been... This storyline has been done.
Zack Snyder's Superman is evil Superman. No, he is. He's mind-controlled. He has to fight. He fights the whole Justice League, doesn't he? When he comes back,
it's only because he's like not in his right mind.
I thought you just meant like his Ayn Randian portrayal, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of true.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, yes, he is evil that way too. But anyway, I should be delighted to be getting a Suicide Squad game, and I am. I'm probably going to get this. Although even it's 2022 and next gen consoles, so who knows we'll be at that point.
Right. It might be like, well, it might be good for holding off the barricade against the mutants.
Right.
Like, to block the door.
Yeah, I'm using my Xbox to drive away the marauders.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're also getting a Suicide Squad movie by James Gunn. I should be more excited for this, too. Everybody on my feed is thrilled with this. I am skeptical, but...
Are you skeptical because of it's just DC?
No, I think it's because it's not your vision of Suicide Squad.
Right. I want...
Bronze Tiger ain't going to be in this.
I want Bronze Tiger. I want these sort of, like... I want them up against more and more grounded threats. Apparently, the threat in this is rumored to be Starro.
I did not imagine this, but I think there's an article floating around with an interview with James Gunn saying that this is a sequel to Ostrander's series.
Ostrander's series or the movie?
No, specifically he said Ostrander.
As if those events had kind of at least somewhat occurred?
I don't know. Maybe just more in kind of his head, but that's what he said.
I mean, that's probably his way of saying I want it to be a spiritual follow through line.
Well, and that's where the good comes in for me. Like, I'm a little worried that James Gunn is making it too goofy, because that is his sensibilities, that kind of thing.
The Ostrander stuff back in the day was almost like an espionage comic. Mm-hmm. They would very often go to other countries, face off against metahumans, where John Ostrander invented all these other very cool superhero teams that you would see over the years, like, you know, a Japanese superhero team and stuff like that. But and
they did have a sense of humor.
Right.
Like, and even occasional Absolutely. Goofy humor. Yeah.
Yep.
So it could work great.
Resurrecting Dr. Light in a coffin, only for him to die 30 seconds later.
That's one of the weaker issues.
No, that was a good issue.
But the trailer is, like, full of deep cuts. He's got the guy who played Rocket Raccoon, his brother Sean Gunn, is playing Weasel, who was from the Doom Patrol Suicide Squad special.
A one-shot issue.
Yeah.
I had it as a kid.
John Cena is playing...
John Cena is playing Peacemaker. That's the perfect casting.
Old Charlton character.
Yep.
There was, Javelin.
Played by Fula Borg.
A no-name character from the comics. Gunn is as much as already joking in the interviews and stuff about, like, the half these guys are gonna die or whatever. He's, like, pretty much said it so that we know some of them will not be around. But, yeah, there's... Idris Elba's in there. Nathan Fillion is in there.
My money on Capaldi is playing the Thinker, which is great casting.
Idris Elba is playing Bloodsport, who was a one-shot villain. I know he's been used since, I guess, but one-shot villain from John Byrne's Superman relaunch in the late
80s. Like a shotgun that had fire, or a gun that fired kryptonite
shards?
He was
sort of a deranged Vietnam vet, although there was a little twist on it. But there was that was back in the era of, like, Rambo, when he came back broken. Who Luther channeled, and he gave him a Luther tech gun that could fire little shards of kryptonite.
Do you guys know who Nathan Fillion is playing?
TDK.
Yeah, do you know what TDK stands for?
Nope.
Total Death Kill?
The Detachable Kid. He is playing Arm Fall Off Boy.
Oh, wow. From Legion of Super
That's what they're saying. He's a renamed Arm Fall Off Boy. Oh, man. Ancestor of.
And then we have... And then we have Yondu, Michael Rooker playing Savant.
Savant, which is a Birds of Prey character. Then we have King Shark. Man, King Shark's having a year.
He is.
He was, Ron Funch has played him to perfection.
In
the Harley Quinn. Then he's in a video game. He's gonna be one of these guys that everybody's gonna know, just like Bane or like Harley Quinn. Like he's gonna be a fan.
This trailer that we're talking about is not really so much a trailer as a literal roll call with some cool music over it of the characters. They juxtapose like these kind of pop versions of like freeze frames almost of the characters. With the actor in it, but they're sort of juxtaposed after showing their comic book incarnation.
Yep.
And you see that a lot of the costumes are surprisingly close, even to the point of being a little kind of garish and pop.
I love that they put their Rick Flag in the Rick Flag outfit.
Yeah, he's got the yellow shirt.
Well, I'm hoping under James Gunn that actor, which...
Joel Kinnaman,
he's a good actor, will maybe blossom a little bit and be more like Rick Flag.
I also noticed there's something here about... One of the things that James Gunn's done, and it's what earned me, even if I'm a little nervous about it, earns a lot of respect and trust, is... Remember when Guardians of the Galaxy trailers were coming out? I remember the first thought I had was... This is either going to be great or an utter train wreck. And at this point, he's done enough stuff where I'm like, I think great is probably a safe assumption. Because he loves the John Ostrander comics.
Right.
And did you see the poster that came out that was like a painted poster? We don't see a lot of art posters anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of in the style of, I think people said, like the Dirty Dozen poster from back in the day.
It's a reference to like the Green Berets.
Oh, wow.
And the tagline is, "You're welcome." Which is the same thing he did for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think one of the things that DC has lacked that Marvel had in spades was the swagger.
Yeah,
the
chutzpah.
The we are going to look. We're just going to do this. And the fact that he's like, yeah, here's John Cena with a silver helmet. Here is Weasel. Like you're either on board or you're not. Like this, he's like, he's wearing a yellow shirt, motherfuckers. Get on board.
Did you see the behind the scenes video?
No, I did not.
It's good, and you get to see a few little set pieces here and there, and like a couple of the actors in action. It looks like a lot of fun.
But
I did not see. My
hope is that we're going to get James Gunn influencing the DC universe a little bit more in the direction of fun, and less in the direction of murder, death, kill. Which brings us to our final trailer.
I'm just hoping that Margot Robbie continues to be the Birds of Prey Harley as opposed to Suicide Squad, which is kind of the same, but...
I think there'll be a little less male gaze in this than there was in the original Suicide Squad.
I love Margot Robbie, so...
Yeah, and I love the Harley Quinn movie. It was fun. Let's talk about the Batman trailer by Matt Reeves.
Yep.
All my friends are going nuts for this. I don't know where you guys land. I was disappointed in it, but I also, as several people have pointed out to me, I'm not exactly unbiased when it comes to DC. Right?
And I'm disappointed in it for a different reason. It's super self-serious and dark. And
no, that's what I don't like about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought you were because everyone knows you hate DC at this point.
Yes. I still wanted Batman to be good, and Matt Reeves directed 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I really liked.
Well, here's the thing. It probably will be good. Matt Reeves' track record is solid. Robert Pattinson is a great actor, regardless of his Twilight.
Matt Reeves' 10 Cloverfield Lane is actually one of my favorite thriller suspense-type movies in, like, the last decade.
And Robert Pattinson from The Lighthouse and that...
Vampire movie?
Well, the movie that he did with the...
Good Time.
Yeah, Good Time. He's a good actor.
Right.
Did I like seeing him, like, weirded out with black face paint under his eyes and everything? I'm like, I don't know.
Dave, where'd you come down on this trailer?
The weird thing is that it looked too Seven to me. There was, like, I couldn't quite tell what was going on. As people have noted, it's also a literally dark trailer.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to see in the murkiness. But, like, there's some kind of serial killer tying people up with duct tape and, like, with bags over their faces or something early on. Yeah, and I guess Riddler is going to be, like, a scary Riddler.
Yeah.
I will have to enjoy it, I'm going to have to, like, change my, like, my mode of thinking on Batman and, like, definitely buy into it. I think within that, there was, like, the dynamics and sort of the craft looked interesting. I thought the visuals looked pretty good. I was weirded out how angry Batman seems to be. I'm going to punch somebody out and then keep punching him to intimidate people is kind of weirdly brutal, and that's strange to say about Batman. Beats up people, but he's usually not portrayed as brutal. And I don't know if that's like what's going on in that scene. I don't know if this is like some particular intent behind it, or he's supposed to be kind of getting his bearings or what. But I'm not super excited about it either. I think there's a decent chance I will see it.
There were elements I enjoyed. Jeffrey Wright
looks great as Gordon. Yes. And having Batman at the crime scene with Gordon, I liked.
Yeah. The blink and you'll miss it appearance of Colin Farrell's Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He looks dead on as kind of like the Cockney
Morgan Tough guy.
I'm a little worried that they've again gotten Catwoman wrong. Because Zoe Kravitz, I thought was great casting, but there's like it doesn't look. I want Calvin to have like panache and fun, and they keep going this dark way, and I need her to be the lighter element in it.
Granted, this is only like a 2-minute and 30-second trailer,
right?
You know, can encapsulate everything.
They were not showing too much as far as like talking scenes, other than you got crime scene vibes.
Yeah,
there was clearly like riddles left by the Riddler, with kind of had a creepy hand scrawl kind of thing. So again, more of that Seven vibe.
Yeah,
I am fascinated, but like I'm almost more fascinated by what I hope the movie will be, which is he's said many times, Matt Reeves, that he wants that it's going to be like a mystery, and I have a feeling that that's how all the villains will play a role in it. Is that like, you know, the Penguin is not going to be maybe the central villain, but he you might have to go to the Iceberg Lounge, or more likely some brutal underground fights he runs in this.
Right.
Yeah.
to get some information and all that. I think it'll be like a high action mystery sort of thing, but I'm interested to see somebody sort of pull off that kind of thing. You know, can they do a long Halloween Hush type of thing, you know, in cinema?
I want them to make a comic tie-in. Mm-hmm. that has, like, the flip book thing.
Yeah.
Where you can just, like, flip pages and make him beat up a guy over and over again.
You just flip the page back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Flip the page back and forth,
and he, like, keeps beating up on the guy. Yeah. And then you flip, turn the page, and it's, like, a big splash that says, I am in vengeance.
Oh, that's a good idea, right? just recreate that one scene.
Just that one scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I assume is pivotal.
Everybody wants serious Batman. I mean, that's what it sells.
Here's the thing. I'm seeing people push back a little too far, though. People are like, oh, but I want the Brave and Bold Batman. I want to fight aliens. I'm like, I don't want that either. Yeah, what I want is what Nick talked about in the chat, which is a where's our Morrisonian Harry Chested Love God Batman?
Yeah,
we want a little bit fun, a little 70s bit more fun.
Batman. Yeah.
I think I want adventure Batman.
Yeah.
And
yeah, honestly, if they went with a little bit of the vibe of that sort of those 90s-ish, not quite the I want better quality, but like both like Phantom and like Shadow and Tomb Raider, yeah. Weirdly. That's like, yeah, some globe-trotting adventure in there. Like him fighting Ra's al Ghul and like, but like fun sword fights, not like a Liam Neeson's like, I know your darkest inner secrets and I'm going to expose your human foibles.
If we see another Bat Family Murder and Origin and all this stuff that we've seen before, I'm like, everybody knows Batman. Take him outside of Gotham.
We've seen now the Origin movie 3 times.
Yeah.
Oh, I think more than that.
Maybe more.
They sneak it into other stuff.
I would like this to have been more of a stab. I get he's young, but I'm like, I would have loved them to have had Robin in from the outset. I would have loved do Batman Beyond, do something different. I'm tired of Batman, but I understand that the last Batman movie was in what, 2008?
Was that Nolan's last?
I think. Wasn't Rises in like 2008?
Yeah, no, it was like later.
Is it later? But it's been a while.
I'm going to guess 2012.
At any rate,
I'm going to guess 2014.
At any rate, we are at the point of, it was 2012, you're correct. So that's 8 years.
Okay.
So we are looking at
it's time to reboot the Grim and Gritty.
I'm just saying that the people who saw that now are 9 years older, and the kids who came up looking for a Batman movie, they want what we all wanted when we were moody, shitty, gothy teenagers, which is, show me a Batman who's dark.
You know what's funny, though, is that for all that, you know, and there is like a little quasi-revival of interest in Schumacher's movies because after his death, including the weird release, the Schumacher cut of Batman Forever, which apparently does have an extended cut with a little bit more seriousness. But that was like at the time the highest grossing Batman movie, I think I read, like Batman Forever was.
Really?
Yeah. Because, yeah, they had just kind of gotten all their like ducks in a row as far as promotion and everything. And
you got Jim Carrey, you had Tommy Lee Jones. It's some big people.
Right. So even though that's where the series took its first direction into full camp, it actually did super well.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, you know, and I suspect that Batman and Robin did pretty well too, even though it became like legendarily.
That's,
you know,
like derided. Super camp.
Yeah.
Batman Forever was just legendary
Batman
camp.
Batman Forever, and Jim Carrey's performance is super camp. Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones is super camp. Any difference between those two movies that people see, I believe, is invented.
So, Dave, you don't think that this Riddler's me a lot like Jim Carrey's Riddler?
Alrighty then.
I think this is going to be Hannibal Lecter, Riddler.
Yeah.
By way of Paul Dano, which I like Paul Dano, so.
Yeah, right now, I guess I can't say. I want to revisit the trailer again, but right now I'm not particularly enthused for that movie.
Yeah.
Did we ever get confirmation or denial of, is his Batman symbol made of the guns that killed his parents?
Never got a full-on confirmation.
Because I kept looking and trying to see it, and I couldn't tell if that
we
was
We did
true
get a full confirmation that this takes place in an alternate reality. This is not part of
the Justice League
the DCEU.
I assumed, yeah,
that much. I hadn't thought about it, per se, but my assumption was not that it's like that he might meet Shazam at the end of it.
I am just
like, holy moly.
No, Shazam's like, hey, my friend's getting bullied at school. Can you come and sit at the lunch table and say you are vengeance?
No. At the very end, Takitani shows up. That's the kind of...
Yoinks, I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Mr. Mind is controlling the Riddler.
Anyway, all of this sounds more interesting to me than I think I'm going to be in this movie.
Yeah.
But the Ben Affleck Batman is going to get one more shot because he's going to be in the Flash movie. So I guess they haven't 100% given up on the Shared universe.
I guess whatever Morse or what treatment that Grant Morrison wrote with what's his name who plays the Flash won DC over again. I mean, I don't know.
It's so weird. I assumed this movie was not going to happen at this point, but it sounds very much like they are doing Flashpoint. Again, I can only judge by what my Facebook friends look at. Most of my Facebook friends who are super excited about the Batman were all like, "Ugh, we don't want this. Why is Batman in a Flash movie?" And I understand that they're doing Flashpoint. Flashpoint was basically a sideways Batman story. It's about Thomas Wayne and all that stuff. So, who knows?
I'm more excited about a Flashpoint movie because if you do go crazy, you get, like, the weird Atlantis stuff with Aquaman.
Yeah, if Morrison was behind it, it may be
the Mascara kind of stuff.
Packed with more imaginative sights and sounds.
Some stuff maybe we haven't seen on the screen as opposed to the same stuff we've seen on the screen with Batman.
And the Flash stuff that we have seen, and I was going to say, well, as much in the form of Quicksilver in the X-Men movies, but also the Flash stuff in Justice League, I've generally liked, at least power portrayal-wise. I don't have strong feelings about either of those characters.
I like the actor well enough that it plays the Flash. I'm blanking on his name at the moment.
Ezra Miller.
I thought he did a solid job.
I like him better as the Flash as... other than that scary kid.
We don't want to talk about that movie, Nick.
Anything else
from Fendome?
Nope, that's it from Fendome.
All right.
So that is it for news this week. We're going to take a second, and then we're going to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of August 19th and 26th, the tail end of August.
Yep.
And I guess the big thing to kick off with is the Three Jokers.
Right. You know, the Three Jokers has been in the works for, like, half a decade?
Rebirth was 5 years ago, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's been in, like, 4 or 5 years since they announced
that. Because he talked about this at Rebirth.
Right. And things that also teased in the first in the Rebirth special was the Watchmen crossover, Doomsday Clock, which finished up what 6 months ago, eight months ago, like recently ish. But basically, all of the big stories it teased, including the Three Jokers storyline, took forever to get out.
Yep.
Geoff Johns did produce both of those things. It just took a while.
Yep. He's not the fastest.
I have no idea how much has changed in this time. Like, is this very different from what he had conceived 5 years ago? Tone-wise, this is like a three-issue prestige format miniseries. It's from DC's Black Label. Yep. There's light swearing in it, but not big swearing. Tone-wise, it's probably a little bit close to the Matt Reeves Batman movie trailer. Maybe not quite as dark.
I was going to say, it's dark, but I don't feel like it's... It never got that dark for me.
It wasn't Seven yet.
Right. There's no severed heads in boxes.
But it does begin with sort of a discussion, and I'm not going to say... I don't think we want to give too much about the plot. But it does begin with sort of a series of three kind of grisly crime incidents in a night, all featuring the Joker, all at the same time... And all, like, kind of caught on tape or eyewitnessed.
Yeah.
So that people are like, wait, how is this even happening? Are there multiples of them? Are they working together? Is this, you know, what is exactly happening? And it establishes a fairly intriguing mystery about who they are. And it is, the book is not shy about kind of being, you know, showing at least a chunk of what's going on early on. Like, you will... It does seem, at the very least, there are three physically different incarnations that represent maybe, like, different eras.
I haven't read it, so I assume that it's a lot like the One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish of Joker.
Yes.
The way it actually opens, though, you said with all the murders, it does, but in doing so, it introduces the sort of three heroes that are at the forefront.
Right.
And their interactions with Joker.
They're like the counterpoint. There's three Jokers and three heroes.
Yes. And it's Barbara Gordon, Jason Todd, and
AKA
Bruce.
Red Hood.
And they've all had pretty darn important interactions with the Joker.
One killed by him, one seemingly permanently injured at the time by him, Barbara. And Batman, who generally doesn't like him for reasons which should be obvious.
Now, Batman, he broke his favorite vase in a little-known 70s story.
But they do it in kind of black-and-white flashbacks of their interactions and all the scars that Batman has gotten throughout his and Alfred kind of sewing them up. It was an interesting juxtaposition, but the story is very kind of murder mystery, and I really enjoyed that
a little heightened, because it's like, I mean, they are tracking down clues, but it's like very larger than like Gotham murder mystery. But yes, it's more like, I have never been able to quite plug into the Jeff Loeb murder mystery stuff of Long Halloween or Hush in particular. Jeff Johns's murder like mystery type stuff, I broadly like better. I get kind of more caught up.
I was going to say, I like Jeff Johns' stuff better because they're doing something proactively more often than not to try to figure out where Jeff Loeb's murder mysteries. Batman always comes after the fact.
On Halloween, it seems like it was just Batman showing up too late, 12 issues
ago. Oh, this guy got murdered. Oh, okay. I guess I'll have to wait for another holiday.
That's World's Greatest Detective.
That's the 7 model.
A little bit too late.
Sort of they're each trying to figure out this in their own way, and then they sort of come together.
You know, I don't know if we kind of said it, but I think the three Jokers, from what I can tell, are clearly the Alan Moore era Killing Joke Joker.
Yep.
And also very clearly the, I believe, 70s, 80s Joker that would be the one when he kind of came back as Dark in the 70s.
But also a
little
bit of the Mark Hamill Joker.
Yeah. If you want to think about him, he's the one who did the Laughing Fish storyline, but also the one who was involved in, who killed Jason Todd.
Yes.
And then there's a third one that we're not 100% sure
but we think is the original incarnation from the 40s.
He's sort of the one who kind of brooded in the shadows a little bit and wasn't always smiling.
Does he have a Cesar Romero mustache?
He does not have the Cesar Romero.
He's not among them.
Yeah. So, depending on...
Those are not the icons of sorts here.
I think
there are many arts.
I think
through it and I saw the raccoon in there.
Yeah.
What? Is there a raccoon Joker?
There's not a raccoon Joker.
Oh. But I think Dave and I will both agree that this is probably Jason Fabok at his best.
Oh, yeah. His art is... I don't want to quite compare it to the original Killing Joke by Brian Boland, but it has some of those qualities, and even he does a little bit of the, not quite the 9-panel grid of Suicide Squad, Watchmen, sometimes he does do that type
thing. But I feel like Johns is doing that because he kind of probably fell in love with it with Watchmen, and then Doomsday Clock has been in his system for so long.
It kind of does a very controlled pacing thing, and he uses it pretty effectively. So, there was also one or two darkly funny moments. The thing with the... I guess what I'm going to say what that shark does.
Yeah.
That was kind of darkly funny. This is too grim and gritty for me overall. I mean, there's just no way around it. But will I read the other issues right now? Yes.
Yeah, there's something to it that will hook you. And especially if you love the Joker, which I know a lot of people do, this is definitely
I think
tailor-made.
They like what they see, and I think there's some sort of notable things happen before the issue ends, and I think people will mostly be into that, I think.
What's But there's only 3 issues, huh?
Yeah,
3 Jokers, 3 issues.
Yeah.
One Riot, 1 Ranger.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk real quick about the Daredevil annual that came out this week. I've been digging Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil. I think it's one of the best things on the stands. This is a one-shot story. You don't actually have to be reading Daredevil to enjoy it. And it is, it's got two artists, Manuel Garcia, and then there's some flashback sequences done by Chris Mooneyham. But basically, this is about Matt Murdock's twin brother, Mike Murdock, who was basically magicked into existence by someone. I don't remember the full details. This happened during the
Brubaker?
Maybe the Charles Soule run. Either way, to the Charles Soule run. Basically, in the 70s, Mike Murdock invented a twin brother to throw. Matt Murdock invented a twin brother named Mike to throw off suspicion about whether or not he was Daredevil.
Right. Yeah, the old Hydra identity. They were always jumping through hoops like that.
So somebody basically in the last few years made him real, and he's like this weird sort of homunculus. He's this con man, this criminal with Matt Murdock's face.
That's weird.
And this is all about him. Basically, he wants to be a real boy. His memories are not real, and he's kind of wanting to have them. So it is basically a year one where they explore what would Mike and Matt's life have looked like if he was real.
Huh.
It's really good. It's sort of like year one type stuff. And it looks like it's leading into him being sort of a new foil for Daredevil. As with all the stuff Zdarsky's been doing, I think it's really good. It's a nice mix of sort of dark crime stuff and superhero stuff. Hmm. Got nice art. I would recommend it if you have been wanting to try out Zdarsky's run, but I'm like, well, I don't want to go all the way back to a trade. This is a good jumping in to sort of see what he does. We should talk about the Mega Man that's coming out this week.
Yep. I don't know if I have a lot to... I actually don't know much about it as far as, like, what it's doing that's different from previous
Mega Man. It's got a really cool cover,
I
will
say. Have you guys played the game? You guys ever played Mega Man?
Yeah, As a kid, I played it. It was a lot of fun.
Games were hard.
I remember once you, like, beat a boss, you took over their ability, which I thought was always cool.
Yeah, you got their, like, special attack or whatever.
Yeah. So that was fun.
This looks like a anime-inspired version, which I've seen before. The art is very nice.
Yeah, the art's great. This is Boom Studios doing it.
It looks like Guru made a Mega Man comic a little bit.
Yeah.
There's also like a little bit of that artist. Who's the guy who does Klaus?
Dan Mora.
Yeah. Sure. This old Santa looking dude. Yeah. You think it because he actually does look sort of like
Santa. Yeah, I can see that. It reminds me a little bit of what the Sonic comics have been doing over at IDW. It is like a return to basics, but also
they're kind of taking the property seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
Like it's action adventure, not grimdark, but at least serious enough.
And there's also a foil cover, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool looking cover.
So yeah, Mega Man fans might want to give that a shot. There was also this week Fantastic Four Antithesis.
This sort of a team up of a couple of legends. There you got modern day writer Mark Waid and classic artist Neil Adams doing the art.
And it starts off with them fighting Annihilus. Then Reed Richards is having some trouble focusing, and the Human Torch and the Thing are doing like prank wars. Like, it is classic FF stuff.
Yep.
And then at the end, one of their big foils, I want to say not enemies, but like...
One of their most famous guest stars and frenemies.
Yeah. He shows up with big news, and it looks like we're going to go from there. I don't know if this is in continuity or if this is an alternate world.
I feel like it might just be its own thing, but there's nothing in there that's not pretty classic Marvel Universe.
But if you're looking, I mean, Dan Slott's FF has been something sort of off the beaten path. If you're looking more of a classic FF thing, this is definitely that.
Yep, Rin, Johnny messing around with each other, Johnny and Ben, and then Reed being aloof, the big old goofus.
There were a couple notable collections this week. One is the House of X, Powers of X, that's a trade collection.
Yep. People have been picking up the hardcover for that pretty regularly, but a somewhat more affordable trade paperback is almost certainly a good thing. The X-Books are probably as like energized right now as they've been in like 10, 20 years.
This probably also means that if you want to get the hardcover, get it soon, because it'll probably go out of print.
Yep, that's true.
And then the other thing is the new Deceased Unkillables hardcover.
Yes, I love this series. It should be the darkest, bleakest thing in all the land, yet Tom Taylor makes it very fun.
Yeah. This is, you know, he's right now writing the single issues of the official sequel to Deceased, basically their zombie story about the anti-life equation kind of becoming a digitally weaponized viral thing.
But this is the sort of villain side of things.
It was like a little
during
side
the first
story.
During the first outbreak, essentially.
I read it, like, just last night before. And I was reading it in single issues, and I think it's the best of the Deceased stories. Like, it's better even than the main one, which I liked a lot, too.
Yeah.
Three-issue story.
It's almost a Suicide Squad story, but with sort of bigger names.
Yeah, Red Hood.
Deathstroke.
He's
The Vandal Savage.
Right.
Cheetah.
Yeah.
Solomon Grundy.
I feel like there was a hero in there,
Shiva,
too, right?
Red Hood.
Well, Commissioner Gordon plays a big role
Commissioner
in
Gordon,
it.
Yeah,
and
Red
Red Hood.
Okay.
Yeah. And it has to do with kind of both the villains who've survived this sort of zombie onslaught sort of being forced to work alongside Gordon for, well, reasons that are best discovered in it. But yes, the villains somewhat having to step outside their comfortable realm of villainy and maybe be halfway decent people sometimes leads to some really heartbreaking and touching moments in it. The artist who I didn't, like, instantly love, I warmed to as I was reading it, and, like, there's some just amazing scenes in there.
Yeah, I don't know Carl Mostert, but...
It's one of those ones where there's, like, there was, like, a couple panels I had to send you all in the storage group chat, because I was like, oh, okay, this is just too good, and, I had to use those ones.
Yeah. It's really good. This is the thing that I think Dave finally won you over to Deceased, although I think you'd read
it was actually the main Deceased. Okay. I had not read this until just the other day.
But this is a rarity. This is a book that we all three like. In fact, I think Does Anna like this one as well?
Yes.
Anna is a big time fan, and Kate, she said it made her cry in the store.
Yep, and Kate likes it.
Yep.
I don't know where Max stands on it, but this is a rare... We all have different tastes, but this is a rare one.
I have a feeling Max
likes
the deceased stuff as well, yeah. I think.
So it is, it's got a full-on management and staff guarantee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we definitely recommend this, and it's nice to finally get a hardcover.
Yep. So I do think the other day I was telling somebody about the my fondness for the series, and they picked up the first few issues of the sequel, and I was like, "Oh, you should probably read the first stuff first."
Mm-hmm.
And I do think you could put this one is standalone enough that all you need is the premise,
right?
But I think, if you're going to ever get around to the sequel, I would recommend reading the initial storyline first. Sequel.
Going back to last week, there's a couple things we want to mention. There is a Dark Knight's Death Metal guidebook. This is like a Who's Who, but for Dark Knights, right?
Yeah. Well, it's actually stories, though. It's not like not character bios and stuff.
It's not?
No, it's like little mini stories. Like a jam issue.
It's almost like when they would do like DC, like the Green Lantern Blackest Night storyline, and have like a little anthology issue. But it would like, who was that guy? Saint Walker? Like they'd be a little story with him. And
I
stuff
thought
like
that's
that.
What the Legend of the Dark Knight thing was.
They were both kind of
like that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they don't seem to be doing like the full on like the texty, you know, behind the scenes stuff. This is a. It's an anthology story.
Yep.
Most notable probably for the reason I think a lot of people want to check it out is because the other bad guy character that's emerging maybe as kind of this year's Batman Who Laughs is the creepy, what do they call him, King Robin?
No, that was from the first. This one has a whole other group of people.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I don't know a lot. I didn't get around to flipping.
I didn't read it, too. I flipped through it. I know there's a story by Chip Zdarsky in there, there were a couple of others that looked really good, so...
And the other thing was Maestro number one, which is Marvel's origin of the corrupt Hulk of the future.
Yeah, first seen in Future Imperfect.
Yep, that was a Peter David, George Perez thing, involved time travel, and I think the regular Hulk had traveled to this future where he was corrupt and evil and running everything.
He was like this, he was like this uber warlord of an apocalyptic future.
So this is how he gets there. And it's interesting, it is Peter David writing it.
It's weird to me that this story hasn't been told in a way.
Yeah, it is. Well, I think he was like, he didn't want to get into the... Because the story that's told...
It was nebulously in the future, like a lot of stories like Dark Knight used to be and all that stuff.
And Future Imperfect was basically, he had him, he's like, there was a nuclear war, all the heroes were killed, and the Hulk was at ground zero and absorbed all the radiation. Well, that doesn't seem to be what actually happened. Like, we get it, because that was from the Maestro's point of view, it was an unreliable narrator.
Right.
But I was kind of hoping that's what we're going to see, was like, how the world ended and how the Maestro... But instead, it's like... He still starts in post-apocalypse time. It's like the Hulk is in an AIM facility and he's under lockdown, and then he's going to go out and it looks like he's still the Hulk. And
he's got a beard like Maestro.
He's slowly going to transform into the Maestro, and I thought it was supposed to be the radiation made him crazy. It's an interesting take. It's really good. Like, I like it, but it's not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah. I actually haven't read it yet. I kind of like that it was... I did, in flipping through it, I saw AIM, and I at least saw, like... I think these might have been from, like, a dreamlike sequence, but him talking to, like, members of the Avengers and stuff. I was pleased to see it kind of rooted in Marvel Universe stuff and not just, like, just Hulk lore.
Yeah.
Which sometimes Hulk stuff is. I actually don't always mind that. It's kind of like Batman. Sometimes Hulk is kind of cool off on his own.
Yeah.
But I sort of at least like the idea, and we'll see if I like it in execution when I get around to it, of this slightly more expanded Marvel Universe-y origin for it.
Yeah.
Did you figure people who liked Old Man Logan would have any interest?
Oh, I think he's in that ballpark, yeah. I actually was expecting it to be more Old Man Logan-y.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised how not post-apocalyptic it feels so far.
Huh.
And I think that's because a lot of it takes place in this underground AIM facility.
But also, that doesn't feel like something Peter David would do.
Right,
This is definitely Peter David.
Yeah. But,
We probably said he's teamed with Dale Keown, maybe most famous collaborator
artist. Oh, is Dale Keown the artist?
I think so.
He's one of the artists, I believe.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I think there is some collaborator in there. But yeah, basically it's the old school Hulk team from like the golden age of like the late 80s, early 90s era.
You know what's funny? I didn't even notice that, and I thought I would. Because
I'm pretty sure.
I'm looking it up now, because I don't believe either one of you.
And I hope you have readied your apology.
I thought there were two artists, and one of them was Dale Keown.
I will extract it from you.
The artists are German Peralta and Dale Keown.
I did like the tension you set up there with the order you put it in.
But I'm still saying that I'm right, because he's only one of the artists.
Uh-huh.
That probably means he just did like a cover or something.
It looked like his art flipping through it.
I mean, Donkey only does art so he can have money to make it from his rock band. So.
I picked it up and I said to myself, classic Keown.
I thought that was weird at the time. All right. That is Comics of the Week. We're going to be back in just a second to talk about some TV shows. So Nick and I want to talk about a couple of shows we've been watching. One is the surprisingly good Teenage Bounty Hunters over on Netflix.
When you say Teenage Bounty Hunters, it's one of those things where you could write it off easily. But then you get into sort of who the creative team behind this.
I didn't think anything of it. And then I saw that Jenji Cohen of Orange is the New Black and Weeds.
Because I watched the trailer. I watched the trailer and I was like, huh, this looks kind of funny and fun. And then I saw who was involved, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then the person who's doing it, like, it's her first big thing. Like, she hasn't really done Kathleen Jordan, and she hasn't really done a ton of other stuff. This is, like, her first thing. But
if this speaks to what she's capable of...
Yeah, it was... I watched it, not the first episode I was in, and it's this interesting mix. It is comedic. Like, it's more comedic even than Weeds or Orange is the New Black. It's a little closer to Weeds.
Right.
But there's some drama stuff in it. But it's basically these twin sisters in Georgia, in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep.
They are, they're sort of rich white girls.
They're the 1%.
They go to a Christian academy, and it opens with the two of them basically in the trucks with their respective boyfriends. One of them is like fooling around. She's like the slutty sister.
Yeah.
But it is the other sister who convinces her boyfriend that they need to have sex the first time.
Yep.
And then as they're driving home discussing this, they get in a car wreck, or they hit a car with their father's hunting truck that they've taken. They're not supposed to have.
Yeah, and they're freaking out.
And then a bounty hunter pulls up who's chasing this guy, and they pretend to be bounty hunters
because obviously they have it's Atlanta, Georgia. They've got a gun,
right? Because obviously they have a gun, and one of them is scary good with the gun.
Yes,
and they basically help capture this guy. They claim to be bounty hunters. And this new guy, Bowser, is like, okay, well, I'll cut you in for it, and they're going to get the money to repair their dad's truck.
Yep.
That is where it starts. And from there, they become bounty hunter interns for Bowser, essentially.
Yes.
And so half the show is about them being bounty hunters.
Yep.
And half the show is about them trying to navigate the Christian Fellowship, where there's also, like, this mean girl who finds out very quickly that she had sex, and that's going to ruin her chance of being the head of the Fellowship. And and then there's also some family drama stuff going on.
There's also, I want to, at the outset, these two sisters are very likable.
Oh, I love them, yeah.
Their characters are a lot of fun.
Yep.
It's interesting to watch them sort of try to find themselves in this kind of weird mixture of bounty hunter, Christian academy.
Yep.
While working at Bowser's yogurt shop, essentially.
Yeah, Bowser operates out of the yogurt shop. Yep.
I love the Bowser and the sort of head bail bondsman.
Yeah, their relationship there.
Their relationship is great.
It's his, like, ex-wife's sister. And they have sort of a will-they-won't-they-thing going on.
Bowser himself is a hoot. I love him.
And I think it's Blair, who's the one of the sisters, starts dating a black guy from the club.
Yeah,
who's like, they meet him, and she sort of uses him to get into the club, and he's like a...
he's a valet.
He's a valet.
So she,
and then she blows him off, and he shows up, and she's like, oh, wait, he's hot.
Yeah.
And
come to find out...
He's a cool guy.
He is.
Yeah.
But I think she believes like he's just a valet, kind of a guy that works there, and finds out that he's something else entirely. Yeah. That was a great...
There's some good characters. Like, all these characters are good. The guy, I can't remember his name, the guy from the club, I can't remember his name, but he's like a major character, and I really like him.
I think the look at relationships and sort of, like... what they are, what they can be, and especially with, like, one is, like, destined to be with this one guy, and they think they're so in love, and maybe that's not the case.
That goes in a different direction,
and I just think it's a good look at kind of relationships, and it's funny. There's some good action in there, and the family drama is solid.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I actually really, really liked it. And Nick, you have not seen the last two, so I won't spoil it, but there's some big twists in that ninth and tenth episode.
I I've heard that, and I'm excited to watch it. We haven't found time, honestly.
Yeah. Originally this was called Slutty Teenage Bounty Hunter.
Teenage Bounty Hunters is probably a better
call. Yeah, I mean, it's clearly ironic, because that's not the vibe of it, but... Yeah.
But if you just saw this on your Netflix feed, and you're like, oh god, that's just another show that Netflix produced, that I can ignore, don't.
No, this was a lot of fun, and I'm glad I watched it. The other show, and this is my favorite show right now, and maybe... It may wind up being my favorite show of 2020. I'll have to do a rundown. But two episodes in, Lovecraft Country, over at HBO Max. Or HBO.
Yeah.
This is based off a novel.
Correct.
And I don't know if folks know this, but Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft, was sort of the father of the cosmic horror genre. The notion of these beasts from, these gods from before time that are so, that will drive you mad if you even look at them. And that they basically are the former owners of the earth, and they're trying to rise up. Using these monsters they've got called Shoggoths and that kind of thing. And all this, you know, the whole Arkham University and the notion of books is, and lore is danger and that kind of thing. He was also super racist.
Oh, yeah. Super racist. And if you've read any of his actual work, there are some in there.
So this is a story set in 1950s Lovecraft Country. Lovecraft Country is Massachusetts.
Yep.
And it starts out in Chicago, and it is about a sort of a black family, and they, one of them, the uncle and the son, Atticus.
He's just getting back from war.
He just came back from the war, and the two of them sort of bonded over their love of fiction, including Lovecraft. Like, Lovecraft exists in this world, and they love sci-fi. He's reading John Carter, Warlord of Mars.
Yep.
He likes pulp and science fiction, that kind of thing.
All of this is thrown into the dream at the very beginning that you see. Which is amazing.
And so his dad's gone missing and is seeking something up in Massachusetts in what he calls Lovecraft Country, because it is where Arkham and all this thing. And they're going someplace called Ardham.
Yep.
And so the first episode is sort of all about him, his uncle, and his ex-flame, this girl named Hattie? No.
Letitia.
Who is a photographer and a singer. And she is kind of trying to find herself a little bit. And they had a fling at one point. Yeah. And they are all going... They go traveling in this car because his uncle writes basically the Green Book, the safe places for African-Americans to travel in 1950s America. And they quickly discover that it is not safe in America, or the audience. They knew it. We, the audience, might not be aware.
But we get to know about Sundown Towns.
And they run into the sheriff, who basically essentially threatens them with death. And they go from the frying pan into the fire. And I'm going to spoil stuff here if you haven't seen the first and second episodes. As basically a bunch of Shoggoths show up and start eating everyone.
Yep.
And I thought that was a phenomenal, like, they did such great, the tension of them trying to get out of the Sundown Town.
Yeah.
And of
as them, the police kind of trail behind their car, and just, like, you know, you can feel that. Yeah,
he can't go over the speed limit, but they've only got, like, 3 minutes to get to the county line. And, of course, it's all rigged anyway.
Yeah, the way that this show, you would think about, you know, big things like Cthulhu and monsters and stuff like that, that they would kind of do jump scares and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of methodically paced in kind of this, I don't want to see AMC kind of way. It's like AMC, but better.
Yeah, it's not as slow as it.
No.
In fact, if anything, they're going fast.
They are. But it feels sort of just like you're kind of just getting, like, lolling into this. Like,
well, and then the tail, after they deal with the monster stuff, the tail end of it introduces this big mansion out in the middle of what is Ardham, clearly. And they show up, and the weird white albinoist butler is like, "Hello, Atticus, we've been expecting you." And the second episode delves into his lineage and what he's doing there.
And a giant cult.
And a giant cult of crazy murder people.
Old white people.
Yes. There's also a perfect use of the Movin' on Up Jefferson's theme.
Yep.
Which is made for such a great intro. Some reveals of there's actual magic.
Yep.
And that memory is a fuzzy thing for some of the characters. And we get introduced to his dad, who is played by Omar from The Wire.
Yep. I was very happy to see him.
And it's... I've seen people gripe that they moved too fast for the second episode. They got through way too much story material. But I thought the speed with which they got through it was great. And I can't wait to see what the rest of the series looks like.
It got through the main or the opening story in about the same time.
Okay.
Yeah. From the book.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to talk about the cast for just a brief moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Letitia is played by Jolie Smollett.
Yeah.
Basically,
Journey Smollett, I think, is
who played Black Canary and Harley Quinn, yeah. And she's amazing in this.
Yeah.
I don't know who the main guy is. I don't know if I've seen him.
I looked him up, but I don't remember his name either. Yeah.
But the guy who plays the uncle is fantastic.
That is Courtney B. Vance.
Yeah.
Has, among other things, I remember him from People vs. O.J. Simpson, where he played Johnny Cochran.
That's right. But yeah, I'm loving this show.
Yeah, it's super good. It is.
It's curated by Jordan Peele, or not curated, but
right.
Showrun.
Showrun by Misha Green, who is a. There's not a lot of black women running TV right now.
Right.
And she worked on Underground over at, I think, TNT.
That's right. She's show running, and Jordan Peele is executive producer.
One of the producers, yeah.
Yeah.
So is J.J. Abrams, actually.
Yep.
So Jonathan Majors is the lead. He plays Atticus. And you might know him from Captive State.
Oh, I didn't see Captive State. It's on HBO right now, so I should watch it.
Yeah, and then I think, I don't see anything else that I'm like, oh, he's in Five Bloods. He plays David. Who I think is the younger.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the son. Yeah.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, this is it's got a good cast. The stuff we're seeing so far I really like.
I liked the head of the cult was most recently in Scandal. He played the president, but I always think of him as the villain in Ghost, the movie with Patrick Swayze.
Tony Goldwyn.
Yeah, Tony Goldwyn is great. He's always great. So he always plays nasty really, really well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's good here. He's playing a white supremacist warlock.
Yep.
Yeah. This is super good. I also really like the HBO Companion podcast that's being done, the official one, Lovecraft Radio.
Okay, I need to listen
Lovecraft
to that.
Lovecraft Radio. It's
so they're doing
really
the same thing they did with Watchmen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Except that it's two women. It's one who's a podcaster and a commentator.
Oh, very cool.
And one who's one of the writers in the room. So it's really, really good. But yeah, this is fantastic so far. I've been hyped for this for a while, and I'm glad that it came out and lived up to the hype. So
yeah.
All right. I think that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.